We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, if you suffered an injury in an accident and would like a free case review, make sure you call the super team at Daspit Law Firm. Free consultations are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 713-CALL-NOW. That's 713-CALL-NOW. Or you can go to the website, DaspitLaw.com.
Listening to Houston's longest running sports radio morning show from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's John and Lance.
All right, welcome back. We are efforting. That's the word, efforting. Noah Henderson. Hopefully he'll be able to join us here. He's wrote a really good piece on, it's the prisoner dilemma. Okay, so we can set that up while Noah's not here. You two guys, they pull a heist, they get arrested, okay? If neither of them tells, you know, then it's going to be hard to prove, and maybe they'll get...
Together for best outcome?
Well, right.
So and it gets to individual personality.
Right. Maybe they'll get a light sentence because it's going to be harder to prove or whatever. If one gives up on the other one,
yeah.
If one gives up on the other one, okay, Noah's here.
Yeah, good. Noah's here so
if one prisoner gives up on the other one, then that guy is going to go down, but the guy who gave him up is probably going to walk free.
There's actually game shows like this on. I saw one the other day where this lady, I guess, ended up with $12,000 because she said she wanted to equally split, but other people didn't. So anyway, joining us now. Go ahead.
Friend or foe, Noah Henderson's joining us right now. He's a professor at Loyola University in Chicago. And he also writes for SI.com. And I'm looking at your picture, Noah. I didn't have any professors that looked this young when I went to school. All right. Is this like Lance, my radio partner? And NFL.com, he uses like a picture from like 20 years ago. Is this from 20 years ago, Noah?
No, sir. I am actually recently 27. I've gotten pretty lucky. Got some opportunities young, and yes, I am definitely the youngest of my peers when it comes to being a professor.
Yeah, but you're not just a professor. You're involved in the NIL space as well. So you're pretty well-versed in what's going on right now across college football.
Yeah, he advises companies, schools, collectives on name, image, and likeness, best practices. Wow. Noah is out there working it. Nice job, Noah. We really appreciate it.
What were you doing when you were 27, John?
I was bartending. I was not doing what Noah's doing. I was not busy in the business world. I was busy in the club world. If you want to know
that's
the truth.
What I figured.
Yeah. So Noah, let's talk a little bit about this, the name, image, and likeness. The problem that seems to be arising is these different states are coming up with rules that will differ from the national norm or what the NCAA is trying to do. And if these states do this and come up with rules that say, hey, West Virginia and Oregon, hey, we're going to do it different. You can't put a limit on NIL. We're not going to have a salary cap. Then the whole thing could be in the crapper, right?
Yeah, I think that you nailed it, right? The NCAA, through this House v. NCAA giant settlement that's been going on, right, has been looking to somehow reel in the landscape of college football, college basketball, that we've kind of accepted as the new normal, where schools like Florida, Ohio State are going to be spending north of $20 million on a roster and finding some way to promote, you know, some form of competitive parity within these Power Four schools. You know, the same stuff that you see within the NFL and NBA, those salary caps that, you know, allow a team like the Indiana Pacers to compete with the New York Knicks, right? Vastly different markets to have some form of competitive parity. Now, for smaller schools like Rice, they're still going to be struggling a bit to maybe meet that top-end threshold of athlete payment. But, yeah, you're right. I think that states like West Virginia and Oregon are crafting state laws now that effectively act like a shield. So as soon as the NCAA was able to get a bit of headway in, you know, creating what effectively is a salary cap, right, $20.5 million across an entire athletic department for each school, these states are now finding ways to kind of circumvent that, make sure the NCAA can't really see what they're paying their athletes. The NCAA can't penalize a school, and I'd never want to see an athlete get penalized, but penalize an athlete, right, for accepting money that goes beyond what is or has been set forth in this big settlement with the revenue sharing cap. And the issue, and I heard you talking about the prisoner dilemma, is that, you know, once West Virginia, and they've already had their bill formally, you know, adopted by the state, the governor signed it, right? If those schools then begin paying their athletes more, right, it's not going to end there, right? Every other state is going to, otherwise that they're going to be at a huge competitive disadvantage. So finding ways to maybe stop states from taking those actions is what a lot of people are thinking about right now.
Before we get into prisoner dilemma as it pertains to, you can explain it from a game theory standpoint, and we can talk about how it pertains to SEC and Big Ten compared to the rest of college football. One of the things I struggle with is, you know, I do think what would be best for college sports would be unionization, allowing the players to unionize. It would actually benefit, I think, in a way, collegiate sports, because there would be standards, there would be collectively bargained agreements. I think it would be clean, the cleanest. You know, I know in the past it was a bad word, but really this is way worse than not having something collectively bargained between the two sides. But I think the biggest problem I have with making comparisons between the 3/4 major sports and then collegiate sports is that they're not functioning off the same collectively bargain. Well, number one, they're not unionized, so they don't have the same collectively bargained TV deals. There's not the same amount of money going from one conference to the next. There's wildly different levels of competitiveness from team to team, conference to conference. So, you know, because it's so big and so different, you can't really, it's hard, and there's so few games, relatively speaking, it's hard to make a comparison with college football with any of the other major pro sports to gain that parity, which would be best for the overall sport, because it's so, you know, it's just so different from the other pro sports in terms of how it's built.
100%. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head here of why we're in these problems to begin with, right? I think that that is the biggest hurdle, because, you know, if we watch pro sports, everything that we see on the TV, you know, really outside the field of play is due to the players' union and their relationship with the NFL. Because, right, all of those practices that we sometimes take for granted, right, getting traded, being drafted, right, that doesn't happen if you are an accountant, right? You're not going to be traded from PwC to KPMG, right? That's because there's a CBA, and that allows you to do things that would otherwise be illegal in many contexts, or illegal is the wrong word, but violating antitrust law, right? So college sports, athletes are not employees, therefore they can't unionize. And, you know, I'm sympathetic to your, you know, thought process here that unionization would fix a lot. It also does come with its own complications to Title IX. It challenges international student athletes who would now need to acquire some form of work visa and not a student visa. So, yes, I think ultimately down the line, unionization for probably men's and women's basketball and football makes sense, and non-revenue sports probably can, you know, play as more of a club model than it currently does today. But, yeah, that's the real sticking point here, is that athletes aren't employees and can't unionize, so concepts we're used to can't just readily apply from the pro context to the, I don't even want to call it amateur context anymore, to the college context.
Yeah, it's even more than that, too, Noah. I mean, the players today are living in a different world than players 10 years, 5 years ago did. And how long are these collective bargaining agreements going to go? Because it could be obsolete. And it's so fleeting. Everybody, you know, I hope that we get back to the point where you play 5 years and not like the 12 years now the kids are playing college athletics. My experience is different than yours in just 4 years or 5 years.
Yeah, I think that collective bargaining could fix that in an instant, right? Collective bargaining would be the solution to fixing all that, where that's just a term of you playing in the league, is that you have 5 years play four. That, you know, the way it used to be when I played, you know, it was, you could 5 years play four, maybe if you had a red shirt, that gets a little squirrely, but there's, you know, all of those issues go away with collective bargaining. I think the NCAA is, actually had a couple victories in terms of D2 guys who are trying to extend their eligibility in football and some baseball cases. So I think that not all hope is lost. We're not going to have 30-year-olds playing in the NCAA. I think that that's a bit overblown, but that's also something that's being fought over really heavily right now.
Let's get it. Oh, I'm sorry. I want to get into prisoner dilemma because it gets to – so I'm big into the collective, you know, doing what's for the greater good. I believe in greater good personally. That's how I was brought up by my parents. And I believe that that leads to best results when you care about the greater good for people. But society has become much more me oriented. I want you to take that with me saying that. I want you to get to the idea, the game theory of prisoner's dilemma and how that pertains to college football as we know it today.
Yeah, so the prisoner dilemma, right, is the concept that if me and you have to make a decision, right, and we could use that friend or foe example that you kind of alluded to earlier, you know, there's $10,000 sitting on a table, and if I go into a room and say, hey, I want to be your friend, and you then walk into that room after me and say, you want to be my friend, we'll split that money and we'll each get $5,000. The issue is I don't know if I can trust you. So rationally, instead of leaving with $0, I might say, I don't want to be your friend, give it all to me. And then I walk home with $10,000 at the risk of you doing the same and leaving me with nothing. And that's a very kind of basic example of the prisoner's dilemma, but ultimately, if I cannot be sure that you are going to act as my friend, right, I, in good faith, a rational actor, would not choose to cooperate with you. Now, in leagues like the NBA and NFL, who have these collective bargaining agreements, they are contractually forced to be each other's friends. Right, the New York Knicks and the Indiana Pacers are contractually forced to split the revenues of all nationally broadcast TV games equally. Right, and there's a lot of reasons behind that to support the league, but right, contractually they're forced to be friends. That doesn't necessarily exist within the college landscape, a little bit at the conference level. But we're seeing this now, not really from conferences or schools themselves, but from state legislatures who are, you know, 90% of the time it's someone from a Power Four school or multiple Power Four schools from their state in their ear of what they want in a bill, are looking to gain competitive advantage, right? West Virginia wants to eliminate investigations into their athletes because they know that, you know, Texas could do the same or Virginia could do the same. So they want to beat them to the punch or just make sure that they're prioritizing themselves and not playing at a disadvantage. We saw this with that investigation stuff. We saw it even a little bit before. There was a wave that I think five different states across the country all submitted state laws that removed state income tax from NIL earnings, which, you know, to some, to fans, this is great. You know, now if we sign Carson Beck for $4 million, well, it doesn't really make sense because he's in Florida and there's no state income tax there. But, right, if you sign a player for that much money, you know, that's a big recruiting pitch. Hey, we can save you, you know, 6%. You know, your offer becomes higher. So Illinois, Georgia, all of these states started eliminating state tax on NIL earnings simply because someone else could have and they wanted to remain competitive.
Okay, so would federal legislation eliminate the state's ability to do to step in and make an unfair field?
I would say yes. Federal legislation preempts state legislation with minor exceptions. The federal government 100% has the ability to step in and implement some regulation over NIL. I think for most people, that's kind of the hope is that the federal government can come in and put some sensible guardrails. Really, really strong athlete advocates are a little bit weary of this because, you know, at the end of the day, any sort of antitrust exemption, which is what federal regulation would be, does in some way harm the total earning abilities of athletes, right? Even the salary cap, right? If we say, yep, the NCAA's number of 20.5 is the one we want to roll with, you know, a school like Texas or a school like Tennessee could, you know, probably stand to shell out $30+ million a year. So some athletes would be burdened by the fact that there's still a ceiling on how much they could make. But in terms of stopping this patchwork of state laws and, you know, different levels of competitiveness and different rules that schools within the same conference are playing under, federal legislation could solve a lot of those issues.
Yeah, I talked to an NBA executive who told me he was almost matter of fact by it. He said, well, the model is not designed to benefit anybody other than basketball and football. And so there are going to be some other programs that have, you know, sports go by the wayside. Certain sports are going to get canceled. That's just the way it's going to end up being until there's a Title IX. You know, they'll be careful not to eliminate women's sports because you're going to catch a Title IX case. But his whole thing was it's just going to have to lead to a very distinct tiers where tier one is going to be so much bigger than anything else. But he said that's really the only way this can work is you're going to have tier one. It's going to have to be like a professional league where you have a professional league and then you have feeder leagues underneath it. And I thought that was – and he was just very matter of fact. He said that's the only way economically this is going to make sense because the smaller schools just are – it's not financially viable for them because they don't make the same TV revenue. Like, they don't have the same revenue coming in, so they can't play by the same rules that the big dogs play by.
No, and that's – you know, I've had similar conversations with mid-major conference executives, right, who are saying that – revenue sharing is such a laughable concept for us because, you know, it's not really revenue sharing, right? We're, you know, a lot of these programs, not necessarily football or basketball, are operating at a loss, right? This isn't right. Revenue. This is donor dollars that are, you know, being funded into the university's athletic fund, which, you know, technically, yes, that is revenue for the school, but, you know, it's not. It is so distinct, right? The difference between Rice and Houston is so, you know, there's such a giant discrepancy in how much money is coming in for the broadcasting rights of those games that it's, you know, it's not the same. It's the same sport, technically the same league, but it is, you know, as far as SBS is concerned, but it's very distinct in terms of facilities. It's very distinct in terms of, you know, eventual compensation once revenue sharing comes in, right? It's, you know, I don't know, you know, any G5 school who's really preparing to pay up to $20.5 million across an athletics department. It just, they don't have the money to do that. And now it's, you know, compensation used to be binary, right? It was, you're a walk-on or you're a scholarship athlete. And recruiting was kind of predicated on this. This is only going to serve to really, at least in my opinion, you know, separate the haves and have-nots when, you know, you can offer players substantially more money than you know, lower ranked schools who might be closer to home or better academic fits or whatever benefits they used to be able to provide to distinguish themselves.
Noah Henderson, SI writer, professor at Loyola, and NIL expert. Quickly, how does this all end? Are we going to get an NIL that makes some sense here soon?
Yeah, I think that there's some case law that's going to stop these wonky sedate laws. I think that federal law, Ted Cruz has been really strongly pushing it. So I think, yes, give it a year, give it 2 years, but we'll have stability soon.
Well, if Ted Cruz is in charge of it, it's a loser.
At least if it's in a state legislature in Texas.
He goes to... His team loses, so dang it. Put somebody else in charge of it. Noah, thanks, man. We appreciate your time. Congratulations on your early success. Keep it going. I'm sure we're going to hear from Noah Henderson in the future. Noah, thanks for joining us.
Yep, thanks for having me on. Great chatting.
All right, that's Noah Henderson, NILExpertSI.com is where you can find his work. Or if you go to Loyola University, you can find his work there. He's a professor, 27 years old professor. How about that?
Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe when he said his age. No, I was reading his bio, and he was like, in 2002 when I was 4 years old. And I'm like, what? I started watching game shows, and I'm like, wait a minute. This makes him 27 years old. And you see his picture, and it looks 27. Yeah, he's a professor. But, it's a complicated thing. It's like he talked about. I've had these same conversations where I was made of aware that it's I talked to Major Applewhite, who's at South Alabama. He's like, man, it's rough for us, Lance, because we're not making money. Like, our money comes in, and it funds all the programs. And now with the revenue share, we're down $300,000 a year. So we're having to go to donors to try to make that up just so we can break even. And so and his whole thing is, look, we just can't, like, we can't play by the same rules the Power Four. We don't make enough money to play by those same revenue share models.
All right, let's talk about Craig DeServe. John Daspit.
Yeah, let's talk about John Daspit. John Daspit is the personal injury lawyer here in the city of Houston. He's the biggest. He's the best. Files, you know, gets the highest settlements. It's really simple. John puts in the work. At Daspit Law, they leave no stone unturned. They want to make sure that everything is accounted for so that when it comes time for your medical attention, everything is paid for. And that includes physical therapy, things that may last into, you know, several years, maybe even for the rest of your life. I ran into a guy with a knee injury, and when I was over at Plex doing some rehab stuff, and he's a listener of the show, and man, he got in a car wreck and he was badly injured. Like, it was never going to be better. And all I could think of was, man, I hope he got a good settlement, because not only is this going to all have to get paid for, the pain and suffering for the rest of his year, I hope it was accounted for properly. John Daspit and his lawyers certainly put that into play. They think about the time that you're going to miss from work, whether it's short-term or long-term. That money gets accounted for in your settlement. Just give them a call. They've got free consultation available 24/7. They speak Spanish as well. You can chat on the actual website at DaspitLaw.com, or give them a call. It's 713-CALL-NOW. That's 713-CALL-NOW to see all the areas of practice where they can help you. Go to DaspitLaw.com.
You are listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
So I'm looking at... I was doing my research for News of the Weird. The 10 hot movies to see this summer. Let me see if you can get... if you see a common theme. Karate Kid. Ballerina, which is in the John Wick family. Jurassic World Rebirth. Superman. The Fantastic Four.
Lazy.
How lazy is Hollywood?
All
now?
Remakes.
All remakes.
Tell Wendy to tell them to stop doing this.
Can we have an original thought?
No, because people don't go see those movies. That's why Sinners was such a big deal. And that was still a vampire movie.
Sinners isn't. Is that a follow-up on a different
no,
movie?
No, what I'm saying is people were so excited about that one
because
it was original, but even then it was genre and vampire. So people don't care for original stories. It doesn't sell. People might watch them at home, but to actually go see an original movie, Hollywood may have problems, but they know. Until people prove...
They're taking lowest hanging
until
fruit.
People prove that they're willing to go see these movies, and maybe Sinners is a start because it outperformed what people expected, they're just going to... And particularly, it's a summer, by the way. This is the summer. Summer's the time for these things.
So I was reading about this. There's so much pressure now to earn your money back quickly because the international market's not what it used to be, is that now movie house, the financiers, they're not taking chances on independent movies anymore. Not like they were. Like, you got to... So now it's kind of the dumbing down, like just everything. You just make it dumb.
Yeah.
And so it's just, all right, just do Marvels then. That'll make our money back. Whatever makes your money back the easiest and fastest, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, but you're naming all the blockbusters, and of course Mission Impossible just came out.
Another one.
At least it's the same dude making the same type of movie over and over again. It's not a remake. It's just Tom Cruise in a series that continues, so people are fine with that. But it's safe, and they know it'll make their money. People don't want to take risk, and until the viewing public is willing to go see those things, we're just going to get them. And like I said, the summer is a time for these things. Like, when I was a kid in the summer, you get the IP. I remember watching Jurassic Park, and that was the original idea back then, but it was still based off a book that had sold, so people thought, hey, let's do the dinosaur thing. But Independence Day, all those things, they all come back, but it's also blockbuster time. And how do you get kids into the theaters? You give them dinosaurs. You give them Marvel. You give them aliens. And they'll go watch it. This is the time to entertain the kids and get their parents there with them. So I don't think it's changing.
I always look for A24. Like, it's one of the only – it's, I don't know. It's maybe not independent, but it's one of the only – like, it's one of the most recognizable. Where I see A24, I know I may have something with a little edge to it, something that may be a little bit different. That's the, I don't know, what are they, is it a, I don't know what A24, is it a movie, what's it considered?
I think it's just a production house. I don't know exactly what
I talked to a production house. I talked to Eric Layden the other day, who told me, John, that in LA, he goes, because LA has been so slow, I don't think I've talked about this on the air, so slow for tax breaks, that, and they haven't given tax breaks, that everything is left, that. Like, when he was on the production studio at Fox, on the Fox lot, there was nothing. He was there for a 911. He filmed a TV show, 911. And he said his work is, like, really dried up. And L.A.'s not even the place anymore. They spent $1 billion to Netflix open something up in Albuquerque for $1 billion for, to do their own filming. They basically said, screw you, L.A.
Austin is going to become the place. Yeah.
Austin and, well, he said Albuquerque, Austin, anywhere that has financial, some tax breaks for the people making the movies, making the TV shows too.
Who was the guy in Shazam? He was the lead of Shazam, not Kazam, not Shaq's movie. Shazam.
Zachary Levi Levy or whatever.
He's left L.A. He said he couldn't get any work because he came out in favor of Trump, and he said no one would hire him in L.A.
Well, Eric can't get any work because there is no work in L.A., he said. He didn't come out in favor of anything.
That's so crazy because there's so many platforms and so many things that are
to
be produced.
But they're not due. But you don't have to live in L.A. Eric said so many of the tryouts and so many of the reads now, you can do it through Zoom.
Yeah.
Like, so you can live in it. So he moved to La Jolla with his family. He thought, it's nicer than L.A. It's not the same issues that they have to deal with. And but he said their whole industry is a real mess. And I thought it would be easier with all the streaming stuff, but he said it's really not. Like, that was the thought, it was going to be easier with streaming. But he said the lifeblood is still television, is network television. And all network television is doing is declining. But he said that's the dream, is to get a TV show on network television that lasts 3, 4, 5 seasons because you have residuals. That's where you can feel more comfortable as a working actor. But those things are drying up too.
Crazy business. Crazy, crazy business. 713-780-3776 if you want to get in here with us on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
I mean, it's a vampire movie, too. I don't know if I can go see a vampire movie.
You haven't seen any of the trailers for it? Like, no. In the trailers, they reveal that vampires are...
But I thought somebody was just sinning.
Sinners? He's talking about Sinners. The movie, the movie that made millions more than they expected. The trailers...
Never really been into vampire stuff.
The trailer, the promos...
They're so white.
What do you mean?
I saw
vampires are white.
Well, all in this one. The initial vampires white. Then people who aren't white get turned into vampires. Maybe that's
a
message
ghoulish.
To everyone.
They got like powers.
I watched Lost Boys when it came out, and then Gary Oldman's conversation or interview with the vampire, Tom Cruise, whoever was in that. And I was falling asleep during that one.
It's set in
the
South.
Sucked.
The music's great in it. It's set in
in the South. This sounds just like the HBO vampire show that was in Louisiana.
It's not like that.
But where was the Louisiana?
True Blood is what you're talking about. This one's set in Mississippi.
Is it a love story?
No. There's love in it.
Called it Black True Blood.
No, I didn't call it that. I just said True Blood. I said it's like if HBO, you asked me about it. I said if HBO did a prestigious Sunday night TV show about vampires, this would be it.
It's gotten, I've heard good things about it.
Well, no one thought you were going to watch it, John.
I don't want it.
No kidding. No one thought you would.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
No one's surprised by this particular slant.
Nothing else to do. Go watch it, John.
Vampires are stupid. They don't exist.
So
and
what?
Abraham Lincoln was not a vampire.
And neither was. And Thorne Oakenshield doesn't exist, so you don't have anything to stand on. Stop it with your cartoon
here
stuff.
Comes nerd.
Yeah, what's
again.
He talking about? He was a fan of the nerdiest thing ever. He read The Hobbit. Cut it out.
I know.
Thorne Oakenshield.
And it's not even the good. By the way,
greedy.
It's not even the
best
Tolkien story.
This John would have literally smothered that young John to death with a pillow if he'd have known he could get out of this Thorne Oakenshield stuff.
He's a nerdy hipster, Hobbit. Too, because it's not even Lord of the Rings. He quotes The Hobbit, not even Lord of the Rings.
I am Gandalf, and Gandalf means
See?
Me.
Pathetic.
By the beard of Durin, I wish I had Gandalf here. Curse him for the choice of you.
It's not even the one that people care about.
Let's look at... Okay, so here is 9 interesting schedule features, and let me see if you agree. Okay, the Patriots... Are you interested in Diggs going back to Buffalo in Week 5?
Well, I'm more interested in Diggs' party boat with Cardi
B. How about that?
I know you've seen that.
I saw that. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, he was surrounded. It's good to be
Daddy, Daddy, Daddy. And they're all calling him Daddy. But Cardi B's on the boat with them, so she obviously doesn't care.
Yeah.
I don't know if the main thing's the main thing was Stephon Diggs. But that is an interesting, like, from a football standpoint, if Diggs can turn off the tail chasing, turn that off and turn on the football, he offers a lot to – Drake May, I guess. I think he's going to get pretty frustrated. Frankly, I don't think they're on his level, meaning you've got to be on a certain level right now for Steph Diggs to not get frustrated, and I don't think Drake May's on that level right now.
Eagles and Packers play in Week 10. The tush pushers against the people who tried to stop it. Maybe they'll have a couple extra tush pushes in there. Ben Johnson goes back to the Lions in Week 2.
That'll be a good one.
The Bears against the Cowboys in Week 3? Matt Eberflus is the Cowboys' DC now.
Yeah, who cares?
Mike Vrabel and the Patriots.
I think the Cowboys are done. I think the Cowboys are done. I think we're done with the Cowboys.
I do too.
In all seriousness, the Dak thing's played out. Too bad. You're stuck with a bad contract. There's only so much he can do. He's a good, not great quarterback. You've got, I think you've got a defensive end who's as interested in doing podcasts as he is in rushing a passer. I think you're done. I think Dallas is done being a thing.
I agree.
It's Washington now. It's Philadelphia. Yep. Those are the two in the division. And Dallas is just like, that's a cute little team. That's fine.
And yet they get the first game and they get all these. They got 12.
John, gotta let this one go, man. The Cowboys will be in your life until you decide to stop caring about football. Yep. It'll be a thing.
I didn't think
The Knicks are.
Yeah.
But the Knicks for years and years are non-factors. They're not, you have to deal with it.
That's all.
Just like the Lakers, non-factors now, but you have to deal with it all the time.
They put this in here, in this list. The Jaguars and Texans haven't played since the Azeez Al-Shaair hit that ended Trevor Lawrence's season and incited a bench-clearing brawl. They play in week three.
I mean, bench clearing's a little strong. It was like two offensive linemen and Aziz. None of the Texans.
Yeah, it was all on their side.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was on their sideline. Expect some pregame shenanigans and first drive tone setting.
I don't know.
Feels unlikely.
D'Amico Ryan's team is not going to have pregame shenanigans. Well, yeah. I mean, Aziz is kind of his own guy. We already know they don't have any control over Aziz.
And the Jaguars have a new staff. So it's not even like Doug Peterson's going to be. Remember what he did to our. It's Liam Cohen's there, and I don't know if Liam Cohen has that juice to rile them up. I think that's overblown. Unless there's a big hit early, but I don't think so.
These two teams have been going. They've been scrappy for years.
Yeah, but do we think a fight's going to break out because of what happened last year?
Well, I don't know. Somebody might take a cheap shot at Aziz.
Well, the thing you do is you hit the other quarterback. What is hitting Aziz going to do? Yeah. You're going to take out a linebacker you'd probably be better off having on the field if you're the opponent?
That's true. 11 jobs with question marks. The first one is Mike McDaniel. Dal, is this it for Mike McDaniel?
Could be.
It could be. I mean, if it's a bad year, he made the playoffs his first 2 years. His quarterback, who gets hurt quite a bit, missed time, and they still were thin. They're on the last week of the season, had a chance to make the playoffs. I think he needs to win a playoff game. If he doesn't, the Heat will be there. I just think health, which is not just a Tua thing. Their defensive ends weren't healthy all last year. He got punished because his team wasn't healthy. I think the owner feels pretty good about him, but he does need to probably win a playoff game. He hadn't done that yet.
Colts GM Chris Ballard.
He's in trouble.
His job is on the line. Yeah.
You know, you never know. Well, so what's his name? Loved him. Chris had a real hard conversation where he was like good with – he told the owner, hey, if you need to do something, you do something. I totally understand. And Jim Irsay was like, nope, I believe in you. And this is at the end of the last year. Like, he, you know, Chris is accountable. And the owner said, nope, I believe in you. We're sticking it out. We're going to keep doing this. And Jim Irsay, as we know, is no longer with us, died last week. And now his daughter is going to run the team. Now, his daughter has been there for years and years in the building. Ballard has a good relationship with her. But the reality is, and that's my guy. It's a godfather of one of my kids. But the reality is, being professional here, you look at the tenure, he's got a playoff appearance one time since 2017. I think there's a reason for it. And Andrew Luck quitting put them in an almost impossible situation. But this is a results-driven league. And if they don't make the playoffs, I think Ballard and Shane Steichen are both probably gone. That's my read based on the way the fan base is reacting right now. So, yeah, I think he needs a big year. And having Daniel Jones and Anthony Richardson is the two guys to try to save you. That's tough action there.
Texans wide receiver 2. A job up in the air.
Yeah.
Who will have the second most catches? Higgins, Noel, Kirk, Dalton Schultz.
Man, that is a really hard one. Because I think Higgins is going to find it's hard for him to get open in the NFL early on. I think Jalen Noel will have no problems getting open. But is a slot receiver going to have, like, is he going to have the second most catches? Dalton Schultz is a known quantity. And then you mentioned Christian Kirk. Like, he's never played, but he's a pro. He knows what he's doing. Man, he's hurt a lot. That's a hard question. You know, on paper, you'd think it's Higgins maybe. But like I said, I think Higgins is going to have a hard time getting open. I think and Jalen Noel, Chris. You know what? I'm going to say Dalton Schultz. I'm going to say he gets in the 60s.
I'm going to say Jaden Higgins.
Okay.
I'm going to say Jaden Higgins. I think Jaden's going to be. He's going to step up and be.
Dalton
really,
Schultz
really
had
good.
53 catches last year. He had 59 before. I think what we're looking at is a 65 catch season this year for him. And I think the clear leader, I think Nico Collins is going to have an all-pro 1400, you know, 13 touchdowns, 1400 receptions. I think he's going to have a monster year.
I think CJ's going to look to Higgins. I think there's going to be a lot of coverage. There's going to be a lot of
Who had the most catches last year for the Houston Texans?
Most catches last year
mm-hmm.
for the Houston Texans, mm-hmm. Nico?
That's correct. Nico Collins was 68 catches, 99 targets. Who had the second most catches?
Second most catches would have been, I think Diggs was still
second. Dalton Schultz.
Was he?
53. Then Tank at 51. Then Stephon Diggs only played 8 games, 47. I mean, he would have been easy. Frankly, he probably would have been the number one leader in catches had he not been injured. But is Higgins Stephon Diggs? I don't know.
He can be.
I don't know because he's a much different type of wide receiver. He's not that kind of route runner. He's more of a intermediate and vertical. So, but he catches, but he's good with contested catches. So that's good because I think he's going to be contested.
Well, it's funny. Neither of us picked Christian Kirk. So,
I mean, he's always hurt. I don't know. Jalen Noel to me, if all things work out the way they should. Or they could. Jalen Noel could have a big impact right away. The same way Tank Dell had one in year one, Jalen Noel could have that in year one also. This dude is really fast. He separates easy. Jalen Noel could end up having a big impact on the Houston Texans right away. But he's a rookie, so you just never know what you're going to get. And will C.J. Stroud, you know, kind of vibe with him early on? Like, that's the unknown. Will C.J. believe in him early? You can't have early drops with C.J., or C.J. could get a little hesitant to throw.
All right, let's go to Underdog and pick who we like, higher or lower.
You go higher or lower with Underdog Fantasy. You know, Underdog Fantasy has a lot of different things. They have WNBA as well. And for a lot of people, they were really piling on with Caitlin Clark stuff, higher or lower on the Caitlin Clark stuff. But you can get – are you not going higher with Angel Reese rebounds? How are you not going higher with Angel Reese rebounds? Now, maybe lower – on made shots, okay, that's fine. But if you're watching those games, or if you say, you know what, I want to get a little, I want to have a little something to watch, something to make this game exciting for me. Let me go to Underdog because I know there's WNBA stuff there. Some of the numbers may be a little soft as well. You may be able to take advantage of it and go higher or lower in the Pick'em Challenge here. You can tie that up with NBA action that you're watching from the playoffs. You know, you can certainly do that as well. Baseball, you've got total, you've got hits on plus, you know, 0.5, higher or lower. You've got total bases, 1.5. Right now, Jose Altuve's on a heater. You could start playing higher on a lot of Jose Altuve stuff, and you would have really been raking it in over the last five games. You pick anywhere between 2 and 7 players. You can win up to 1,000 times your original play. You can start with as low as $1 that you are risking, but you can make a lot of money when you pick multiple picks right on higher or lower with the statistics. Now is a great time to jump in with NBA playoffs as well. So make sure that you use promo code Lance in your initial deposit because you can get up to $1,000 in bonus cash back. But you must use promo code Lance. And you also must be 18 years or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. If you feel like you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or go to ncpgambling.org.
You're back in the Veritex Community Bank Studios with John and Lance.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776 is the number you want to get in here. Our Astros won 11-1.
Love Altuve. Instead of the F word, I say the L word.
Love.
Love Altuve.
4 for 4. With 2 homers, 3 RBIs, he's up to 272. He, that little fellow is just. Day game today, they're facing Luis Severino. Mm-hmm. Lance McCullers against Luis Severino.
Over. Oh, I thought you. Yeah.
Severino is pretty good, but I think they've hit Severino. Okay.
They have.
They've. So, I don't know.
What do you not know?
Well, I'm in this thing where you got to pick a guy to get a hit.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeremy Peña is so on fire at home that I'm thinking I might have to take Jeremy Peña in this one. Or Jose Altuve because he's on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Those two. What do you think? Who you got?
I'm staying with Tuve.
You like Tuve?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like Tuve, too. I like Tuve, too.
He's really hot. As a matter of fact, let's hear from the as you call him, little fella, I call him the greatest Astro that's ever played the game. But Jose Altuve was asked after the game yesterday. They talked to Jose Altuve about, you know, as Dell said, pulling him out of a well like Baby Jessica earlier in the show.
I think
he was just getting his game
you
back,
said
just
that.
Getting his legs back. So Alex Cintron,
Dell, that's ugly.
I didn't say. He said pulling him out of a well, and I said like Baby Jessica.
Yeah, that's what
and he was like, yeah,
yeah, but I didn't mean it. And Alex Cintron is just he's fixing things like he always does. And here's Jose Altuve talking about the big comeback.
Yeah, I've been, you know, last 2 weeks coming early and hit early with Cintron and the guys and try to, you know, find a, you know, a good swing. And, you know, it takes time, you know. I think you got to work hard every day. It's a long season, so, yeah.
Is there anything different that you're doing now than maybe a week and a half or 2 weeks ago that's led to some of these results?
Yeah, probably focus on one pitch to hit versus try to cover, you know, everything. You ended up chasing too much, and I think that was a problem, and we're slowly getting better now.
Did you want that fifth at bat, try to get that fifth hit?
No. Okay, so it's interesting he said that. I was listening to, trying to remember the hitter I was listening to who said, who was talking about the fact that his whole thing was looking fastball. He said, I look fastball all the time. He said, because if you get in a guessing game, you lose your aggression. He said, if you're sitting fastball, you can respond quicker to off. You can respond easier to off-speed stuff as opposed to looking off-speed and responding to a 96-mile-an-hour fastball. And he said, if you only think of one pitch, you're only looking for one pitch, his whole thing was subconsciously, you if you're only looking for one pitch, you have a tendency to widen out and react to different pitches. When you're focusing on, as Altuve talked about, thinking about all the coverage of a bunch of different pitches, then your mind is scattered and you're not focused. You're not aggressive at the plate. So that's interesting. That's the first time I heard him mention. I heard him talking about Cintron, but changing the way he approaches the game. See, that's what a hitting coach is supposed to do. The idea that just players just do. No, it's changing thought process. It's changing, you know, how you approach the game mentally. It can be just a simple change like that that can have an enormous impact. And so good for Cintron and good for Jose Altuve for getting something figured out like that. Because it's made all the difference in the world.
Yeah, he said he's been in the K. Yeah, he's really been working hard trying to get his swing back. Altuve is so – it's like a lot like Bagwell. I mean, it's so unorthodox the way that they hit. Altuve is all motion, moving all the time, and, you know, he'll hit a bad ball pitcher and everything else. Bagwell's his stance was so weird and so different from anybody else that he's got to find his own. They're both those guys, they got to find their own groove, and Jose Altuve is in one now. He's on a jag. Jose Altuve is on a jag right now, and it's the good kind, not the kind where you're wasted and found in a gutter somewhere. Not that kind of jag. Okay, it's the good jag where you're hitting home runs and helping your team to 11-1 wins. I'm scared of taking Altuve today because when the Astros put up an 11 spot, they usually have two hits the next day. That's the problem.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do. It's what they do. So I don't know. I got Altuve right now. I might take. Yeah, I'm gonna go with my little guy Altuve. He's 11-37. Lifetime against Luis Severino, so, and he's got a homer against him. So let's go. Let's go, Tuve. I got you today. I got you, babe. 713-780-3776 is the number if you would like to get in here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776. Let's catch up on breaks, and don't you go anywhere. Quick one here, and we'll hit you on the other side. 713-780-3776.